Are you focusing more on what others want for you, vice what you really want? Do you find your to-do list getting longer and longer, and it doesn't seem as if you're making an impact? If you're asking yourself, what is it all for? Now what? Or is there more? You may be ready to embark on your next step of self-discovery. After 5 years of researching, attending, and practicing, our guest, JJ DiGeronimo, is joining us to share key findings from her journey. We're going to talk about some of the strategies that help her infuse more purpose and meaning into her work and life. Now, as you listen, begin to think about what you can do to take control of your life. The self-doubt and negative thoughts that have been holding you back from becoming who you really desire to be. But before we get to that, good morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you may be. Welcome to another exciting episode of Let's Coach. Let's Coach is a show that brings the best from the coaching world for you to use in your everyday life. And we talk about what coaching can do for you. We bring you great small business ideas and some good news stories and stories about people who are paying it forward in their everyday lives. My name is Carolyn Owens, and I'm the host of the show. And when I'm not hosting, I serve to help you up-level your skills so you can up-level your income, your career, your business, or your life. And I love to connect with you, the listeners of the show, and hear what you think about it. You know, if you'd like to be connected with the guests that we've had on the show, just go ahead and reach out to me at what I call my connection hub. If you go to carolyn360.com, you're going to find everything you need to connect with me there. A link to my blog, the website, this podcast, as well as how you can email me. So go ahead and check that out at carolyn360.com. Now, joining us today is JJ DiGeronimo. Thank you. DiGeronimo, an award-winning author of 3 books that empower women with tried and tested strategies, mindfulness, and energetic practices to increase their impact and influence. Formerly a leading woman in the tech industry, she helps women raise their frequency, and her work has been featured in Forbes, The Wall Street Journal, and Thrive Global. Her latest book, Seeking, provides 74 key findings to raise your energy, sidestep your self-doubts, and align with your life's work. And today, JJ is joining us to talk about her journey, what she learned, and how you can begin to create the life you desire to have. So let's give that warm Let's Coach welcome to JJ DiGeronimo. Hi, JJ. Welcome
to the show. Hello. Thanks for having me.
You know, there is so much to talk about today. And I want to start with a myth that exists in society. And you write about this in your book, is the myth that once you get to a certain place in life, that it's just pure bliss. But that's not the case, is it?
Not with anyone I've met. It's definitely, you know, I think the carrot keeps moving, right? So we keep stretching and striving and doing and being. And oftentimes we are waiting for that next thing to light us up or fill us up, only to find when we get to that point, we have the next new thing we're stretching for. And as you know, I talk about a friend of mine that wrote her first book and everything was delayed due to paper and all kinds of things. And the day her book arrived, she was supposed to be so happy and joy-filled, yet she was so stressed and under pressure because she had missed deadlines to get the book out and people were expecting it and she felt like she was letting people down. So even when we are planning for something monumental, oftentimes expectations, self-worth, and our inner drive gets in the way of making those moments something to celebrate.
It is. I've seen many times where people think, oh yeah, I just want to achieve this. But then they realize, no, there's something I got to keep going for this. And then the next thing. And oftentimes it's associated with something else we'll talk about in a moment, money or those materialistic things. You yourself, though, were working very successfully in the tech industry. Why did you stop?
Well, it's funny. I loved my job in tech. I loved the industry. I worked in high tech out of Silicon Valley. But I had an inner turmoil that was undeniable. And year after year, it would get more fierce. And I just felt like there was something else I was supposed to be doing, even though I couldn't really describe it. And so for my 40th birthday, I decided to go on a solo trip, which was really hard to do. I talk a lot about this because not only the guilt of asking for alone time, but also the money that I needed to go on this trip. Even though I had my own salary, I felt like it was guilty for me to ask for time alone. But I knew at 40 that I needed some kind of clarity. I was driving and thriving in my career, yet I was feeling so unsettled on the inside. And so I booked a solo trip to Sedona for 4 days, and it was fantastic. I mean, if you haven't traveled by yourself for work or on your own in the last 5 years, you may want to consider scheduling a solo trip, because just quality, quiet time of going to the airport, getting your rental car, getting to your destination, having a meal by yourself, even if you're going ahead of something else that's planned, I think there's so much benefit to just spending time by yourself. Mm. So just going there by myself was fantastic, but I scheduled some really intense sessions in Sedona to kind of get clarity on why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing? Because all those things that I thought were going to bring me happiness only made me feel more and more unsettled.
Mm. A lot of women, especially, struggle with just being able to leave the kids behind, you know, not think about their partner, or, you know, just going off and being able to go on a solo treatment by themselves, just because of the things that you have to detach from to do this. But it's actually something you encourage people to do. And you actually offer retreats yourself.
I do. I offer the retreats because I am an avid speaker at women's events. I go to women's events all over the world. And I notice that so many women are essentially disconnected from themselves, disconnected from their intuition, disconnected from grounding themselves into Mother Nature. And so after one event I had in Seattle, I was walking off the stage and I got a message or a whisper, bring the women together outside. And I didn't really know what that meant. And I was like, right now, bring them outside. I can't do that. We're in a conference center. But I feel like so many women are so much showing up, doing, being for other people. In fact, you know, if you're in any type of business, it's such a masculine energy. We check half our knowing at the door to participate in business. And so many of us women are detached from that intuition, that connection to Mother Nature, that inner wisdom that comes with us. And so the retreats I started not only for myself, because I was disconnected too, but I did it for other women too, because I feel like we have to remember that we have a whole pool of knowledge that we don't tap into as much as we could, and that we are more alike than we're different. And I think for many of us, carving out time to learn about who you really are, like really are, not without the title, without the salary, without the last award. Who are you really? What makes you tick? Yeah. What are you chewing on? What are you struggling with? Getting that solo time is so, so instrumental.
Yeah, and that's a great question that I pose to our listeners out there. And regardless if you're male or female, is who are you without your title? You know, so many of us attached to that. That becomes our identity. But if you were to take that, you know, CEO, president, you know, department head, you know, you take that away and you peel back those layers. Who are you really? Now, that's a great question to pause and reflect on.
You know, and one that I had, yeah, I really had to do that. So when I, after going to Sedona about 18 months later, I left my day job to really work on my next book and do more work with women in business. And it was funny because after 6 months of being on my own, I had a complete meltdown. Oh. Not because I wasn't excited about what I was doing, but I had no idea who I was. I found myself defining and explaining myself from my past role. I was embarrassed to talk that I left my job. I was like, you know, am I really an author? I don't know. I do some speaking. Is that really valid enough? So I went through this whole really, I want to say, like, in the mud puddle, rolling around, trying to figure out who I was. And that really was the basis for my third book that I didn't start writing until just 3 years ago, because you have to work through it before you can share the lessons. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to share how lonely it is to go out on your own, and how much work you have to do when you don't have anything to define yourself by.
You know, and you even at one point, indirectly, I'd say, tried to sabotage your marriage and, like, little things that you did. How'd that turn out?
Well, I think when you're trying to figure out who you really are, like, you kind of push away from stuff that you know, you're just out there just trying to figure it out. And I got to a point in my life where I was like, what is this all for? Like, I have all these accolades, I have, like, the LinkedIn page, I have all these wonderful experiences, but, like, what am I supposed to be doing here on the planet? I'm surely not supposed to be, like, programming routers or selling technology. Like, why am I really here? And even after I wrote my books, I'm like, is that enough? Do I have to do more? So I think I just kind of got to a reckoning of my own to really kind of figure out who I am. And in the process, things started to happen around me that shook me up. Like, the rug was pulled out underneath me. Things happened in my family. And I feel like it was the universe really just bringing me down to the core to say, we will help you, but you have to let go of all these things that define you.
Man, you know, you mentioned, you start asking that question, what is it all for? Is there more? People often, they don't know what they're searching for. You find yourself, like, in that place that you're describing when you were working in the tech industry, and even having the courage to actually walk away from something like that. When people start asking these questions, like, what is it all for? Now what? Is there more? You know, what should they do?
Well, I will say that I definitely had a safety net for myself. I saved up a ton of money before I left. And so I kind of always thought, well, if it doesn't work out, I'll go back, just to be completely transparent. So when I brought out, I'm like, well, I'll see how this goes. But after 6-7 months, I ended up with a therapist because I was like, I have no joy. Should I go back? I don't know. And she was one of those guides in your life, somebody who pushes you right when you might want to go left or not even make the turn. And I think guides are amazing when they come in your life because they kind of allow you to move down your path a little bit faster by guiding you to the next step. And she really encouraged me to go to mindfulness training, which of course I thought was absolutely ridiculous because I was an A+ player. I got shit done. I was going to get it done. And mindfulness to me seemed like something you do on the top of a hill. Like, I was not into it. But then I went back again to her and she's like, please don't come back until you go to mindfulness training. And I was like, oh, this woman, like, was she for real? So it was an 8-week course designed by Jon Kabat-Zinn. And it wasn't until the third week that I actually left my notebook in the car that I actually was participating in the practices because I couldn't even function outside of my thoughts. I was so conditioned to be in my head, to produce, create, design, reflect, analyze. That's what I was praised for. That's how I got my raises. That's how I got things done. So the thought of being mindful, which is not any of that, right? It's just being mindful of what is happening around you, what's happening in your thoughts, took some serious training.
You know, you mentioned mindfulness. What then is the difference between, you know, we hear mindfulness, we hear meditation. What's the difference between mindfulness and meditation?
That's a fantastic question and one I could have never answered before I started. So mindfulness is the essentially tool that gives you the space between you and your thoughts. So mindfulness is essentially the theater seating. If you can sit in the seat and just watch what's happening in your thoughts, don't grab onto any one of them, just create space so that you can be an observer of what is happening. Because what I thought were my thoughts were who I was, but in reality, my thoughts are just a portion of who I am. And mindfulness gave me the freedom to just be, not be in the past, analyzing, reflecting, dissecting and not planning for the future, right? Strategizing, worrying, anxiety, what could happen. So the idea of just sitting and being gives you some beautiful gifts. And one of which is you can be in the moment. And it sounds absolutely crazy that I was never in the moment, but I wasn't. I was never taught to be in the moment. I was never in the moment. Mm. I was always planning for the moment, which just flew by me.
Yes.
So it's not surprising I had no joy, because joy happens in the moment in which you are in. And if you are always in your head and always in your thoughts, you're not going to experience the moment or the joy you have in your life. And so mindfulness is the tool to give you the ability to just recognize your thoughts, not grabbing on. Meditation is being able to sit in complete peace and quiet without hanging on to any one of those thoughts. And in my opinion, you can't really meditate without being mindful. Some people can, but for me, I needed to recognize that my thoughts were only a piece of who I was. And so it was really important for me to get that skill down before I could meditate. Because what I thought meditation was listening to a meditation and making a to-do list, or listening to a meditation and planning the next discussion I was going to have, or sitting in a meditation and writing a presentation. None of that is meditating. Meditating is just really just being in the present moment without attaching to any one thought. And mindfulness is the tool that helped me actually meditate.
So would you say that mindfulness, is that a state that you're constantly in? Or do you learn, like, do you practice it at certain moments? Or is it a constant state of being?
I would say the goal is to be a constant state, but for many years, I've been doing this since 16. So for many years, it took me a long time to practice. But now I'm mindful a lot of my day. If I catch myself chewing on a thought or over planning, you know, I have planning sessions and strategy sessions, but just right now, like, I'm here with you now, you're here with me. I'm not planning, I'm not doing, I'm not worrying. I'm in this moment. And I have a lot more joy in my life because I'm in the moments I create, which allows me to be part of those interactions.
You know,
and an easy way that I've just kind of fixed this. Yeah, an easy way is like just going to the grocery store. I used to be on the phone, going through the grocery store, you know, I'm too busy. And now when I'm in the grocery store, I'm making eye contact. I'm smiling. I'm like looking at everybody at the grocery store, wondering why all these people are here when I'm here. Am I supposed to meet somebody here? I'm friends with everyone at the grocery store now because I have really practiced on being present in my chores so that I can experience the souls that I interact with.
So you know how to put the phone down and not have it permanently attached to the ear.
Oh, yeah. I have no desire to be connected like that anymore. I don't watch TV like I used to. I don't go watch the movies I used to, because I'm really working on raising my energy and keeping my energy high. And I have to really be mindful of what I pay attention to, what I think about, what I watch, what I listen to. And it's non-negotiable anymore. Non-negotiable.
So as you're saying that, what I'm thinking is that we have to be mindful of what we feed our soul. You know, when you're talking, you know, the movies, when you watch some of the movies you watch, and even the books we read, the people we interact with, what are we feeding our soul that allows us to not have all the distractions in life? I was smelling as you were talking, because I have this picture that hangs on my wall. It's been there for years, at least over 10 years. And it says, don't dwell in the past. Do not dream of the future. Concentrate the mind on the present moment. You know, and it's exactly what you're describing. And I hadn't read it in a long time, how difficult it is for us to be present, to truly be present with the people we're with the actions and steps we're taking, because we'll do so much multitasking. Or you'll have a concept I've been hearing a lot about lately is the overthinkers. You know, they will overthink every step, every decision and things that they have to do, that they're not, you know, truly just enjoying and having that joy that you described.
Mm. Yeah, the overthinkers, the perfectionists, all of those people are really just trying to avoid discomfort. So they do those tasks and fear that they're not going to be prepared. And the reality is they have to dig through where that came from, the stories that came from, things that happened in their life. Could be second grade, could be four years old, could be, you know, your first year of college. We were taught somewhere along the line that we had to be perfect to be loved, perfect to be accepted. And so if you're an overworker, overthinker, if you call yourself a perfectionist, I would caution you to really think, like, why do you feel like you have to hold yourself at that standard? What are you avoiding?
And you mentioned this, is there more? You know, some people are yearning for more, but they struggle with defining what that is. How can you identify it?
Well, I think for many of us, it's just our soul is yearning for something else. And oftentimes what we're doing is not filling us up. And so the initial title for the book was Off the Side of Her Desk. Is what are you doing off the side of your desk that actually does give you fulfillment, maybe something you enjoy. It could be sewing. It could be crafting. It could be, you know, doing something for a nonprofit. It doesn't matter what it is, but what are you leaning into when you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing?
You know, and the title of the book is Seeking. And you refer to your journey as seeking. What does it mean to be seeking?
Well, it's interesting because now that I am mindful, now that I go through life paying attention to what's happening right before me, it's amazing how many guides I have in my life, how many messages that come my way, how many moments of just laughter that I never had before I started doing this. You know, I did when I was in high school and grade school, but once I got into college and started like that fast track of getting there, I was so focused on strategizing and getting there that I was not in the moment. And so I feel like for many of us that feel like I'm just not satisfied, what is this all for? Why am I doing this? I don't feel good. I'm depressed. I drink too much. Whatever you feel like you're in right now, a lot of times you have to do the work on the inside. And if you don't do the work on the inside, you're going to rely on the outside to tell you who you are.
Yes. I was just interviewing a coach, Will Baptiste, and that's part of what he works with a lot of men. And he was saying that's a lot of what happens, that regardless of male, female, however you identify yourself, you've got to do this inside work. But most of us will seek it, validation, confirmation from someone who else who may not even be aligned with our purpose, you know, the direction that we want to go in. And they're steering you on a completely different path, you know, a different trajectory, which ultimately, in listening to you and thinking, it leads to no joy, no fulfillment.
I think it was Tony Robbins that said, which of the parents did you seek the most love from? And what did you have to do to get it?
Can talk a little bit more about that?
So I'll repeat it one more time. So Tony Robbins said in his Netflix special, I'm Not Your Guru, I think it was. He said, which parent did you seek the most love from? And if you didn't have to live with your parents, maybe grandparents, aunt and uncles, people who acted as though they were an adult figure in your life. And what did you have to do to get it? Because a lot of us strive repeat patterns in our life. And so oftentimes somebody that was an instrumental person in your life that you were trying to get some kind of recognition from at some level, that role plays out again in your life through somebody else. And I talk about in the book that we have a character, you know, a series of characters that come into our lives at different times. The main goal is to teach us lessons, but we often have certain situations happen again and again until we learn the lesson.
Yeah, you think about that can be hard, learning those lessons, because that requires, like you said, that internal work. A lot of people don't want to face that reality, you know, to be.
Well, yeah. they probably don't want to face the reality, but if you don't want to do this again, I would definitely get my lessons down this time. You know, the whole goal of us being here is to awaken our souls, to learn our life lessons, and our lessons come through people. So if you're in a difficult situation, a relationship, something with your parents, maybe a coworker, you know, a next door neighbor, there is a lesson. And so one of the ways that you can move through life is, what is the lesson? Ask yourself, when you're in a situation, when you start to say, I can't believe this is happening to me, you should think this is happening for me, as so many people say, but then take it the next step. What is the lesson I need to learn? What is the lesson I need to learn?
You know, and you mentioned, you talk about the energy and raising frequencies, and you actually teach women how to raise their frequency to align with their work. What does it mean to raise your frequency?
Well, I think just think about your last party you were in and think about the conversations you were having. You know, were you in the group off to the side talking about maybe your errands? Were you the group that was complaining about your kid's coach? Were you the group that was talking about work and how things aren't going the way they're supposed to be? Really think about what conversations at parties do you migrate into? Because often we are attracted to similar energy. And I have run the entire gamut of energy from the lowest of lows to the highest of highs. And I would say sometimes you don't know when you're a practicing polluter. A practicing polluter finds negativity in everything they do. Everything's a challenge. Nothing works out for them. They're always the one that gets kind of just things don't work out to a way that they feel like they get the short end of the stick. If you are in that energy field, you are at a low point. I'm just going to tell you. And you often attract other people that are in that mud puddle. So if you want to get out of the mud puddle, you have to shift your energy. If you're in the middle zone where you're like, oh, I talk about this and that, there's really no purpose to my conversation. I'm just kind of talking constantly about whatever. You might want to tighten that conversation up. And I think for me, one of the things I really had to do is do some self-assessments. Even in my first book, that's over now 14 years old, I did an assessment back then saying every comment I say, whether it comes out of my mouth or not, is it positive or negative? All day long, I monitored my thoughts. And a lot of them were negative. And I was like, you know, I need to find more positivity in my life. And so I've carried this message through all of my books. And in this book, I talk a lot about gratitude, that if you are someone who wants to raise your energy, the first thing you need to do is get mindful of your thoughts. Do they lean positive or negative? How do you lean more positive on your thoughts? And one of the ways that I do that is I really focus on what I'm grateful for. And I have a gratitude practice all day long. I'm not just sitting in my notebook before I go to bed. Like, I literally move through my life saying, thank you that I have gas in my car. So glad I could have a hot cup of coffee. So happy I have sidewalks to walk my dog. Love the fact that there's a short line at the bank. Like, whatever it is, and even things that don't go well for me. And that happens every day. Every day things fall apart. Things don't work out as planned. I'm like, all right, this is good because. And that's how I think of everything that comes my way. This is good because. In fact, I'm getting right now, I have to pay a fee on a photo I used on a website back in 2015. Well, it's good because I need to take that website down anyways. It's been out there for a while. I haven't made time to do it. And this payment is just forcing me to prioritize that project to get that project taken down. Yeah. So like, you just have to really train yourself to move into this positive energy. And as we mentioned before, it's not just about what you say, it's what you watch, what you eat, what you talk about, where you spend your time. Because if you want to raise your energy to meet other people at a higher energy, which is pretty fulfilling, that type of energy and lifestyle, you have to work at it.
It's funny because I was paying taxes and everybody hates, I'm a person who's like, I just doing taxes drives me crazy. And I had to make a payment. And I remember being very thankful to make that, even have the resources to be able to do that. I was like, okay, gosh, I got to pay this bill. But it's funny, all I kept saying was, thank you, thank you, thank you. Because maybe what if I didn't have that, the ability to be able to make that payment or, you know, pay those taxes. And it's something, and we all get frustrated with it, but it's something we know every year we have to do. You know, but it's one of those ones that's like, you know, all I could say was after it was done, I was like, thank you. And
thank you.
When I, you know, hit that button. It's like, thank you. And I was like, oh, why am I happy that I'm doing this? It was because I'm happy that I'm able to do it. You know, even a couple of years ago, I posted a picture. I can't remember what platform it was, but I was thankful to have a washer and dryer because it was something that was on news or TV or something, and people were talking about not being able to wash their clothes or do something. I was like, well, very thankful that I could walk down my steps and actually, you know, wash my clothes that day, because there are people who don't have that. And, you know, so being, it's some of the small things, like you were talking about the a short line in the bank, you know, that gave you, you got more time back by having that short line that moment. But we don't stop. We let so many things pass us by because we're not present. We're not thankful. But it's such, you know, having a mindful practice is very difficult for people. Why do you think that is? Why do they have such a hard time with it?
Well, society conditions us not to be mindful. Society doesn't want us to be mindful, because if we were all mindful, we would raise the frequency of the planet and we would all live a better life. So there's like this energy that really doesn't want us to be mindful, because it goes way beyond this conversation, but it's, you know, there's this, you know, we have to choose to be smarter than the ego. And as mm-hmm. I view it, as we come into this body, the energy of the soul, the higher being of itself comes into the body. And we are essentially engulfed with this ego energy that is the mind chatter, is the monkey mind, is this self-doubt that all of us experience. And I believe our life's work has to do with allowing our soul to shine brighter than our ego. And I talk a lot about this at the end of the book, because I feel like so many of us have been kind of duped to think that our mind is all we have, and that we have such a bigger toolkit beyond just our mind. But so often we get so caught up in the thoughts of our mind, we never create space for anything else.
It's funny because you mentioned we did a whole episode on the ego that I'll put which episode that was. I don't know the episode number off the top of my head, but it's recently we did an episode on the ego and how powerful the ego is and the thoughts that we have. I love the exercise, and I encourage the listeners to try it. When you just talked about tracking these negative thoughts or what and positive thoughts, you know, what are we consuming our mind with in every day? Are there more negative thoughts? And if so, is it time for you to begin to raise your frequency so you have some more positivity and joy in your life? And we'll talk about some ways that you can help people with that in a moment. So I know one of the things that is mentioned in the book, we have Chela Diaz as a regular guest on the show, and we talk about our money stories and our relationship with money. So I loved hearing that in your book when you were talking about the money stories and relationships. What is your relationship with money?
It's evolving. It's evolving. I am a work in progress. And I talk about this throughout the whole book, Seeking, of all the things I've done to work from the inside out. And I've had to really dive into things that have been holding me back or not allowing me to feel good enough. And three of the chapters are on money, because I grew up with no money, which had a really strong hold on my decisions and my self-worth. And I talk about this whole journey that money has played in so many of the roles and opportunities and even the work that I do now. And I have had to do some deep soul seeking on money. And I followed some great authors that I highlight in the book that have taught me so much about how to view money and what money is and how to make it work for you. Mm. So I don't want to blow it, but I will just say that you can use money in a way to forward anything that is important to you. And it can actually have a very, very positive energy, regardless of how little or how much you have. And I feel like for me, that's been a huge journey to utilize money as a tool rather than seeing it as a scarcity.
Yeah, and just I recently talked to someone, and we were going through a memory and talking about a situation, and they realized that an individual that they knew, their behavior was related to the thought of scarcity in their life growing up. and how that impacted the decisions they made, how they lived their life. And it was in such a negative way because they were always chasing something because of the scarcity, trying to keep up with everybody, trying to live a certain lifestyle, but they didn't have this true joy in their life because oftentimes we're defining our worth with these material things and money so much so that we miss out on living.
That's so true. It's so true. And it's kind of like the second hurdle beyond your ego is how do you view money? How do you view money? So it's like, if you can kind of dissect your ego, your relationships, your connection to money and your self-worth / self-doubt, you can really get into the crux of what makes you tick, why you think you're here, and what's the work you need to be doing.
And you, most times we hear it related to the self-worth, but just then you've related it to the self-doubt as well. You know, how, you know, our relationship with money can impact our own self-doubt, not just our self-worth.
So much so. So much so.
You know, in the book, you talk about we give money too much power. Yeah, it's, and it's all around us. But what we see on social media, in the movies, the books, you know, often, even some of these gurus who are saying, you gotta have, if you're not, your goal should be to buy your own jet to be able to fly around and or do things. But then you think about, you know, if people, the reality of how much it takes to fuel that jet, where you, you know, parking, everything that goes with that. You know, it's just, you chase these dreams. One of the things, and this was from the book that I loved. We give money power more than human life. Can you?
So sad.
Speak a little bit to that? Because I thought that was such a powerful statement.
We give money more power than we do human life. I mean, just think about that, right? We give money more power than we do human life. And we've done that for centuries. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that's why we're on the planet. I don't believe that we're here to chase money.
It can actually cause, when you're, you know, seeing people chasing money and they end up ill, they have heart attacks, they have strokes. So much happens. And again, there's not that joy. And the other part of what you were saying was money harnesses the power that we give it.
Mm-hmm. So if you, like I did for years, I gave money the power to control me because the fear of not having money was so overwhelming to me based on my childhood that I would do anything to make sure that didn't happen, which means I worked crazy hours. I accepted roles I probably should have passed over. You know, I've done all kinds of things and I'm not, it doesn't define me, but it also doesn't disgust me. It's just was part of my journey. And I until I was more awake and aware, I couldn't really learn the lessons of money. And even though I've heard of Lynn Twist probably back in 1998, because I was an avid Oprah watcher, actually 88, probably 88, 92, you know, that type of year. I watched her every single day. I just gobbled up all the information. But even when I saw her in the late 90s on Oprah, it didn't resonate with me that. And so it wasn't until about a year after the mindfulness training started that I saw Lynn Twist again with Oprah talking about money and how much control it has over people. And that's when I downloaded her book, The Soul of Money. And I listened to it 3 times because I just really needed it to seep into my soul of the messages and the lessons. And I'll tell you now, like, I don't go without, like, money appears when I need it, but it is not my focal point. And in 2017, a dear friend of mine said, get rich from the energy you create. Get rich from the energy you create. So I needed that shift to take it off the dollar signs into the exchanges I have. And for me to get rich based on the energy I exchange, I have to be in the present moment.
I can't be doing it and figuring out something in my head. I have to be in the moment with you and anyone else I cross the day with. And it's just crazy how life has unfolded with the like letting go of things that used to define me.
It, you know, once you establish a mindfulness practice and, you know, possibly meditation with that, and you're observing and you're hearing and seeing the negative thoughts, the actions that come from it, understanding that relationship with money, the negative thoughts, that doubt can still creep back in. How do you keep your light bright?
Yeah, that's a great question. How do I keep my light bright? Well, I just want to say that the reason I wrote this book is I wanted to share all the behind the scenes work I had to do to get to where I am now, which I believe my frequency is definitely higher. I'm interacting with different souls. I'm doing really empowering work. But this was a 7-year journey. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to share in the book Seeking all the steps I had to take to kind of clear out my closets, work through the stories I gathered along the way, process relationships and the impact that they had on me. And now that I've dug out all of that stuff that no longer serves me, I have a lot more room to keep bright, positive light. But this did not happen overnight. This, I visited 50 energy practitioners. I've done some solo trips. I've done a lot of, I probably read 100 books. Like I really invested in myself in a way that I never had done before, but I felt like I didn't have a choice. I got to a point in my life where, you know, I was either going to drink more or jump off a bridge or invest in myself. It wasn't like I was like, maybe I'll invest in myself today. It usually happens when you hit a wall. And for me, it came in all different directions. And I felt like I had to figure out who I was if I wanted to really lean into the life that I sort of planned before I got here. So there's a lot there, but I feel like now I can keep my light bright because I've been practicing and working and digging and removing and releasing. And I think it took a little bit every single week. An hour or two every week over 7 years is a lot of time. And you can start wherever you want. And Seeking is really just a tool to give you some ideas of where you could start.
You know, I, for one, am very grateful that you chose not to jump off of that bridge, because you are impacting lives and you are making a difference through. And I know a lot of your focus is on women, but, you know, that ripple effect that it has, because, you know, we're not just interacting with other women, we're interacting with the entire world and being able to show someone how they can shine brighter, and the impact that, you know, just think about sitting on that beautiful beach, that hot sun, that impact that has. That's what this is like when you kind of wake that part of yourself up. But you also just mentioned the one thing. We live in this fast-paced society, and we want it now. From, you know, let's just throw it in the microwave, 3 minutes, it's done. We go through the drive-thrus. You know, we want this overnight success because that's what we see. We see the end game, but, you know, it took you a while to get there. You did the work, and you took the time to do it. For someone who is older, you know, and I'm going to just throw some ages, like say 40, 50, even 60 years old, is it too late to do this? Because it took you 7 years, and they may be hearing that thinking, why do this then? Just, you know, be content with where I am.
Well, I'll tell you that I'm in my 50s and I'm so glad I did it, because I'll probably be here till I'm 90. So when I think about it, I was halfway through my life and I'm so glad. And I have to say, like, I don't feel like I had a choice. I wasn't content. I was completely displaced in my choices, and I needed to figure out who I was at such a deep level that I don't think I really had a choice. And I think a lot of women that are shifting and men that are shifting now are feeling like, I need something else. This is not working for me. This is not working. Where do I start? And I feel like that is the story and the conversation that I'm having a lot now with people is like, let's talk about one of your biggest hurdles. Let's talk about where you feel the weakest, or where you feel compromised, or where you feel insecure, or you have a lot of self-doubt. Let's dig through those stories, because a lot of us have things we still want to do, but we're sitting on the side of the pool saying,
oh gosh, I'm not ready. Now's not the time. And I guarantee you that that's part of your life's work to do whatever is sitting on your heart. And if you're talking yourself out of it, you need to find ways to talk yourself into it. And a lot of that is just really doing the work within to give you the belief that now is the time.
Yeah, I think if we're honest with ourselves, you know, if people were really to stop and pause for that moment, to slow down and pause, they would, and be honest and admit to themselves that, you know, there is some discontent. They're not having this joyful life that, you know, we may have once had the ability to have, but with all the noise that we have going on, all the self-doubt that creates these negative thoughts because we have to be something that we really don't want to be, but we feel like this is what's needed, this overachievement in doing these things. And we pause and imagine if we were just to realize, hey, this isn't what I really want. I can make these shifts. I can, you know, take the time and raise my frequency. And I imagine if we have more people living from that space, what kind of society we'd have. I believe, you know, listening to you, reading your book, that we'd have more polite people. We'd be kinder to people. We would see the value in each other. We've lost that decency where we do not value each other the way we should and could. You know, if we just were able to pause for those moments. And like I said, you've been doing a lot of impactful work between the presentations and the workshops and the retreats that you do. How do you work with people?
Well, I'm tasked with getting the message out to as many as I can before I move on past this lifetime. And so books are a great way to do that. Workshops are great. Retreats. I try to do one to many as much as I can because I feel like that's really a way that I can empower more people to really dig into their stories, into their relationships, and into their lessons. And I just want to go back on the idea that, you know, we all are masculine and feminine energy. However, the world is incredibly masculine, incredibly masculine. We are very much in the do, get, be, you know, design, strategize, defend, whatever it is. And so all of us could benefit from tapping into our inner wisdom, into our intuition, into our inner knowing. And, you know, the more of us that really start to kind of give space for that awakening, that reconnection, the faster we can start to balance the masculine and feminine energy. And so I encourage you, if you're inspired by anything we said and you feel like you're ready to embark on this journey, to take a look, download some chapters for free, just really try to figure out where is the best place for you to start.
And so where can somebody reach out and connect with you or get a copy of the book? And I want to say the title again, it's Seeking 74 Key Findings to Raise Your Energy, Sidestep Your Self-Doubt, and Align with Your Life's Work. Where can they connect with you, and where can they get a copy of the book?
Well, it's all over. You know, Amazon is obviously a fast place. So I always look up Seeking 74 and JJ. That's the easiest way to find it on Amazon. Otherwise, you'll end up on a dating site. So Seeking 74 and JJ. But you can also go to my website, jjdgeronimo.com, and download some free chapters if you just want to take a look. But I encourage you to read the reviews. I mean, all of those reviews are from readers. And I feel like it's been one of those books that actually helps people open doors, transform, step in, lean in. And it's not for the faint heart. It's for the person that's ready to do their next.
That's important. You've got to be ready. Because like you said, oftentimes we feel like we hit this rock bottom or this mental or emotional place. And if you're there, this might be what you need. In the comments here for the show, you're going to see a link to JJ's website. So you can definitely connect there. And I encourage you, you know, get the book. But what I like is that you also have an audio version. So for people who don't like to kind of just read the book, or you want to play it, listen while you're at the gym, listen while you're taking that walk, listen while you're driving in the car. So you can, there's an audio version. And then it tells you how to get some of the workbooks and exercises that's on the website. So definitely check it out. Again, there's a link to the website there. So you'll see that. So I want to ask you, so I have read the book, guys, so I will say, so I encourage you to get it. And So JJ, I want to ask you, at this time in your life, how are you feeling?
I feel lucky. I feel lucky that I was forced to dive in to this type of work, to the soul work, because now my life is so different now. I feel like life is happening for me. I never know what any day is going to bring specifically, but I will tell you that what is happening now, the spaces I get to meet in, the conversations I'm in, the retreat space that has manifested itself is beyond anything I could have dreamed for myself.
Man, and guys, check out the retreats. You know, I've gotten to see JJ through Zoom, and I will tell you, it's authentic. It is. Mm-hmm. I like to use the term courageous authenticity, and it's there. And it's something that you can have too. And so I know we're winding on a show here, and there's always a final question I like to ask our guests. And so I'd like to ask you, what is that main message that you want to leave our audience with?
If you're with us to this point, it's no accident that life is happening for you. This message is for you. There is something that we have shared that is an opportunity for you to dig into. And I would probably guess that you are ready to embark on this soul journey.
Definitely. And guys, if you're wondering, well, I can't afford a retreat right now or something, start with the book. Start with the book. It's definitely, and as you dive into it and do some of the exercises, and JJ didn't mention it, so I will. She also does speaking. She will come to you, your office, or do a workshop. If you have a women's group, and you'd like her to speak to that women's group, excellent, excellent choice here. So reach out to her and connect with her. And just, you know, check out her website, follow her on social media. There's a lot of value there. And I've got this feeling that this is something that somebody out there needs. I don't know who you are, or you know someone who needs this. And I want to end, you guys know, I have a way that I end the show, and I want to do it a little differently. Because there was there was a quote in the book from JJ that I wrote down. And you guys have probably even seen me share this one on social media. Because, you know, I mentioned, is it too late to start? And how do you get started? And oftentimes people think it's this giant leap that you got to take. But here it goes. Here's the quote. Small steps can create a spark of light for what is ahead. What is ahead? This is your journey. Make time for what inspires you. So I'll say it again. Small steps can create a spark of light for what is ahead. This is your journey. Make time for what inspires you. Yeah, I feel like we don't do that, you know? So make that time. JJ, thank you so much for being here on the show today. This was awesome. I know it's touched somebody, and I thank you so much for your time.
Carolyn, thank you. And I look forward to keeping our conversation going. Thank you for the work that you do and all of us that you reach out to. So thank you.
Thank you. And for our listeners, I want to thank you for joining us for another exciting episode of Let's Coach. Until next time, if it ain't broke, make it better. Have a blessed week, everyone. Bye-bye.